Emergency food programs continue to struggle during a recession to feed a growing number of hungry people in our region. Activists say a new study of hunger in New York State shows that emergency food programs can never be a substitute for increased government action to end the growing problem of hunger. Mark Dunaway, executive director of the Hunger Action Network in New York State, says instead of dealing with emergencies, food pantries and soup kitchens over the last 30 years have been forced by government inaction to evolve into supplemental sources of food for households who need assistance on an ongoing basis. Mark is a community organizer, long-term welfare rights advocate. He serves as the executive director for Hunger Action and joins us in Studio A this morning. Mark, always a pleasure to have you aboard. Thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you, Joe, for having us on. Always a pleasure to be here.
It is. It's great to have you here. I can't believe this because it's because I think I remember like the fifth, but it's the 23rd annual People's State of the State tomorrow at the Capitol. And you've been doing this a long time, and I wonder, you know, have you seen any great change that is something that we can be proud of?
Can be proud of. I mean, one thing I do think. Legislators are more familiar with what hunger is about. I remember whenever we have a new director of the Division of Budget, I'd have to come in and explain to them what a food pantry and a soup kitchen was, and they usually conceived of that as being primarily for homeless people, and I would have to explain to them the food pantries primarily feed intact families and that so many of our guests were children, and now unfortunately so many of them are seniors. I will say New York State should take credit for being one of the, if not the state, that gives the most amount of money towards emergency food, but at the same time, hunger has gone up, I think, every single year that I've been here for 28 years.
And does that fit with a national trend as well?
Pretty much. And honestly, it goes up a lot more during the recession. I think
sure.
In New York State, since 2007, we estimate that the number of people being fed at emergency food programs has gone up maybe 65% or so.
So correct me if I'm wrong, because this whole thing I've worked in this in sort of the periphery, and I was shocked by how this quote-unquote system works. But so basically, we have these EFPs, better known as emergency food programs, and these were designed initially to take care in case something tragic or drastic happened to a family, to take them in an emergency setting and be a temporary solution. Ultimately, what happened is the programs that were there to help people who were in more long-term need were phased out, and these programs were then, it was put on the need for these programs was put on their backs and said, okay, well, now you take care of it as well. And of course, they didn't have the resources to do that. Is that a fairly accurate?
Unfortunately, it is. I mean, we do not know how many food pantries and soup kitchens there were in New York State 30 years ago. We do know in New York City there were about 30 for the entire city. And so that would be people who had a sudden emergency, loss of family, fire, get evicted from the apartment, family breakup. And the soup kitchens were feeding sort of the long-term street homeless. And then in a very short period of time, we got from 30 to over 1,000 in New York City, and now about 3,000 statewide. And there are people who every single month need help because their income is too low. And a lot of it is from working people. When we started doing our first survey back in 1987, about 18% of the guests that we helped had a job, at least somebody in the family had a job. And now it's closer to about 35-40%. Social Security has become a much, much bigger factor. You know, more than a third of the households have Social Security. And that's why we've talked a lot more about jobs, raising the minimum wage, and be a big focus of the event tomorrow. So it has been, you know, a big concern. And we were never set up to be feeding so many people, 3 million people on a regular basis. And I will say one of the changes we've noticed in this recent survey is a lot more of the programs are focused on trying to provide a nutritional bag of food, but it's not as good as the food stamp program. And what happened in 1981 was the first year that Ronald Reagan is president, massive cuts in the budget, particularly in affordable housing and food stamps. And I think most of us thought once Congress realized what impact this was having in community and how it was driving up hunger, that those cuts would be rescinded. And in fact, they were not, and particularly housing. Those housing cuts had never been restored. And it used to be 30 years ago that an average low-income family may spend 25 to 30% of their income on housing. And now they're spending 50, 60, 70%. And when you spend that much money on housing and also increasingly that much money on high utility bills certainly, but also high health care costs, you don't have enough money for food. And that's what the food pantries end up doing, is feeding people who each month need help. And we only give them a bag of food for 3 days. And say with the food stamp program, which has been our best line of defense against hunger, the benefits only last 21 days out of the month on average. So you need 9 more days of trying to figure out how do you stretch your food budget.
When you talk about the food pantries in 3 days, people will go and they'll wait in a line usually, and they will get a bag depending on what their family size and needs are. But you can only, as a food pantry, you can only put in that bag what you have, as much as you have. And if you are low in any given thing, then, well, the family who's there and the people who are behind you all feel that effect.
That's correct. And one of the big changes we've seen over the last 30 years was the food banks are the warehouse operations that collect food and then distribute it to the food pantries and soup kitchens. And when I started Hunger Action over 28 years ago, the government was a relatively small part of the equation, and a lot of corporate donations and then food drives in the private sector. And over those 30 years, the food donations from the corporate sector has dropped dramatically, particularly with mergers and reemergence of a secondary market for food. And the role of the government has increased significantly. And what we've seen has been some real big cuts in the TFAB program, a program we did not initially like because it was really the Reagan response to the cuts.
Yeah.
It was the old cheese and butter surplus,
right,
distribution. And like last year, there was hardly anything coming out of the TFAB program. And I think blueberries, for some reason, was the big thing out of the TFAB program. And, hey, we love blueberries, but that's not a diet for a family, especially a growing family.
What do you mean by the tell me a little bit about what the emergence, you said the reemergence of a what is it for second use of food?
Well, it used to be, for instance, that you're in a warehouse and the guy with the forklift clips the side of the case of food and damages a couple of cans. So they would give you the whole packet. They would throw that to the side and you'd be reclaimed and that would go to the food bank. And now increasingly what happened was somebody would come in and buy that from the distributor, take out the 7 cans or 15 cans that were damaged, and then resell that into the food market. And so food that used to be donated was now being sold, at a cheaper price into the food system. And so that resulted in a decline of donations. And when you had this whole corporate mania, merger, what happened was when corporations suddenly had literally hundreds of millions of dollars of debt, the tax write-off they got from donating food to a food bank or a food pantry wasn't worth as much because they had to pay off that debt.
Right.
And so they had to otherwise get in cash, and that also decreased the donations.
Mark Dunway is our guest this morning. He is the executive director of Hunger Action Network, New York State. We are talking about hunger in our region and specifically the 23rd annual People's State of the State, which will take place tomorrow at 11:45 at the Capitol. This is an annual event. And as you mentioned, one of the key things you'll be looking at is to raise the minimum wage. This has been a fight for a long, long time. Why is it a fight?
Well, that's a good question, because the polls show that 80% of the voters in New York State supported an increase, including 2-1 among the Republicans. I mean, the reason why we work on it is because incomes are too low to lift a family out of poverty. When the minimum wage was started during the Great Depression, and one thing I like to remind people, minimum wage started first at the state level, and then our governor, Franklin Delano Roosevelt became president, and he took the minimum wage from New York State and brought it up to the federal level. And when he instituted the minimum wage at the federal level, the unemployment rate was 19%, much higher officially than it is now. And the reason why he said you had to increase the minimum wage during a time of record unemployment was because he needed some way to stimulate the economy, put more money into the hands of people so that they would buy. And so the minimum wage historically was set at a level that allowed a full-time worker with two dependents to come to the federal poverty level. So today the minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, is really a sub-poverty wage. It does not lift that stereotypical family out of poverty. It's about $3,000 below poverty. Why the New York State Republicans have been opposed to it this long, you know, I don't really know. A lot of businesses actually have agreed to it. The New York State Retail Council, they haven't agreed to what the assembly has proposed, but they said, yes, they understand the minimum wage needs to be increased. Several hundred employers, business people in New York State, including Costco, have come out and said, yes, we support raising the minimum wage. And economists pretty much have agreed that raising the minimum wage at this point does not have a negative impact upon employment, because the minimum wage is so low historically compared to what it's been. And there are so many other factors that go into a cost of a business that raising the wages for the low people at the bottom is not going to hurt. Plus, it's going to stimulate the economy. So given that it has no negative impact on employment, given that the business community, you know, isn't doing parades in front of the supported minimum wage, right, but in general you're not really that opposed to it, and given that Dean Scalise, who used to be, before he became the head of the Republican Party in the state Senate, voted for the last increase in the minimum wage, you know, I don't know why there is so much problem getting this. I don't know why Governor Cuomo said it was harder to convince the Senate Republicans to pass the minimum wage than it was to pass same-sex marriage, which was a, you know, a good issue that the governor deserves a lot of credit for, but the polls were much stronger in support of the minimum wage and much more support in the Republican Party for raising the minimum wage than with the same-sex marriage. He made that work, and he didn't make it work for the minimum wage.
The current minimum wage is what, and what would you like to see increased to?
Well, $7.25 an hour. We have asked for at least $10 an hour, which some of our members say is still way too low. Polls show that the majority of Americans support $10 an hour. The state assembly has passed $8.50 an hour plus index into inflation. I believe the Senate Democrats had $9.25 an hour. We're hoping at least the $8.50 an hour. And to be honest, the day we pass the $8.50 an hour, we're going to hold a rally for another hike. And Hunger Action Network always has been, over the last 25 years in New York State, the first group out calling for a hike in the minimum wage, because it impacts so many of the people coming to the pantries and soup kitchens. But we have no political power. And so we have to work on it for a couple of years until the labor unions and the faith community pick it up as an issue. And that really happened last year. In fact, you may remember last year at this time when Governor Cuomo allowed the speaker to speak at his State of the State, Sheldon Silver said that the minimum wage was his top priority for 2012. But somehow that, you know, did not get enacted.
When you think of, because I guess all of this goes together, of whether it's the minimum wage or funding for emergency food and fair taxes and campaign finance reform, all of this stuff is, it all goes together in the sense of leveling the playing field.
You know, it's about fairness. It's about restoring democracy. You asked about, I think, optimism or before, or what we can be proud of. I mean, the Occupy movement, I think, you know, did change the dynamics a bit. And I think Occupy Albany in particular, who's going to be there tomorrow, had a lot to do with getting Governor Cuomo to agree to a compromise on the millionaire's tax. And as you may know, the Occupy Wall Street movement reorganized themselves to become the leading group responding to Hurricane Sandy in New York City, Occupy Sandy. And I think that's really going to give them some real legs. And I think people are more aware of the 1% versus the 99%, that New York State leads the country in income inequality, that we haven't seen this type of gross disparity, you know, where the top 1% of New York now gets 35% of the income. The last time we saw those type of divergent numbers was right before the Great Recession. And when the wealthy have all the money, the economy begins to collapse. And Joseph Stiglitz, who won the Nobel Prize for Economy, mm-hmm. says, you know, giving tax cuts to wealthy people during a recession makes no economic sense. They cannot spend any more money. You got to put money into the hands of the people who are living, you know, day to day and have a hard time paying the rent and the utility bills and health care costs and buying food, because they're going to go out and spend it immediately. In fact, when Congress did the economic stimulus, they concluded that the single biggest, most effective way to stimulate the economy in terms of what the federal government does is they put money into the food stamp program, because this multiplier effect was 1.8. Because you give money to people to buy food and they don't have enough money to buy food, what do? They go out and they buy food. And that's more money for the local supermarkets and the corner neighborhood stores and for the farmers. And that money gets turned over into the economy. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, we want more money for emergency food. We're hoping that the governor will talk about a $10 million increase in funding for emergency food. It's called the HPNAP program. But also last year, he said a statement that he thought that no child should go to bed hungry. Schenectady, 50% of the children in Schenectady live officially in poverty. That's officially. And, you know, you're talking, I think Syracuse is at 50%. Rochester is at 50%. The amount of childhood poverty in this country is incredible, and particularly in upstate New York along the old industrial cities. And we need the governor to show some leadership on this tomorrow Wednesday.
You know, that's fairly sickening when you think about it, especially when our national debate over the last several weeks prior to the campaign, I mean, even during the presidential campaign, we heard about this 47%, and now during the last couple of weeks, as these fiscal cliff negotiations, we're arguing over, you know, people who are making $450,000 and upwards. I mean, so at what point does there become an uprising in the streets where people say, hey, look, you know, here we are down here, where are you?
Well, I think that's why the Occupy movement, you know, took off. I think there were 18 different Occupy sites in New York State. I think people are cynical. You know, we're trained. You can't beat City Hall. And who's training us? You can't beat City Hall. It's City Hall. But you have to keep, you know, sort of plugging away. And also, if you talk to people at food pantries and you ask them what do they most want, and they're going to tell you jobs. They want a living wage job. And during the Great Depression, you know, Franklin Roosevelt created the WPA program to provide public jobs for people. And we should be doing that in New York. And I was down, you know, I live a lot in New York City these days. And I went down and I visited Rockaway and I did a little relief work in Staten Island. There is so much work that needs to be done to help people, you know, get back on their feet. And why we can't hire, I think we've hired 5,000, 7,000 people to help out. But you could hire 10, 20, 50,000 people and still there would be more work needed to be done in trying to recover from Hurricane Sandy.
And that just makes, to me, that makes sense. So why then does that become a struggle? Why does, I mean... You know, you look at Sandy Relief got completely for, oh, gee, we forgot that when they were passed. It's mind-boggling to me.
Well, you know, that you mentioned at the beginning of the show campaign finance reform.
Yeah.
You know, we need to level the playing field. People like, you know, we're taught in school we have a democratic country. We don't. We have the least democratic country among the, I don't know, the 100 or so countries that profess to be a democracy. We were, you know, relatively cutting edge 350 years ago when we started this country, but we've not progressed. And money counts for too much in the political process in both New York State and the United States. And I know Governor Cuomo is going to talk about campaign finance reform. I'm sure whatever he proposes, frankly, is not enough. But it's at least a step in the right direction. And I think raising the boat for the people at the bottom is more important than increasing the wealth at the top. We had this idea, we're told by the Congress, well, the way to make rich people work harder is to give them more money. But somehow we don't have that same mentality. The way to make poor people work harder is to give them more money. In fact, we say, let's give them less money so they'll work harder. And I think we need to sort of flip that on the back. And you got to deal with income inequality. You can't have both democracy and income inequality. You got to have one or the other. And we got way too much income inequality. And that's been in the last 30 years. We got to really reverse what we've done for the last 30 years with the economy.
Because that's one of the things that from my reading and understanding of, I mean, there was a golden age, right? I mean, we had a point where we sort of had it right in the country.
Well, that was right after World War II because we were the dominant economic force in the world, and we were able to lift everybody up. We were able to give more money to the rich, but more money to the working, you know, families. And so that you could be a worker at General Electric in Schenectady and have a decent quality of life, own your own home, single, you know, only one person had to work. You could put your child to college. You know, when I went to college 35 years ago, I went to a private college, RPI, in Albany Law School. And, you know, I got a couple of scholarships as a caddy, and I got out of school with $3,500 worth of debt. And, you know, these days students come out of school with $50,000, $75,000, $100,000. That's ridiculous. And we don't, and you know, it used to be investment in education would pay off, and now it's not. How many of these students coming out of college don't have a job? And, you know, you look about the revolutions in Egypt and across the Arab Spring, so much of that was also by young people saying, we have no future. And, you know, we're looking at this generation in our own country where they're going to have less of a quality of life. And you're talking about a lost generation, 10 years out of college, and, you know, you're still hustling to have a job at Starbucks or, you know, a job that's not related to a career development. That's a very bad long-term trend for the economy. And those of us about to retire on Social Security, we want people to be productive and have young people have a job and making a good wages so we can help keep that Social Security system going.
You can find out more information by going to hungeractionnys.org, hungeractionnys.org. The 23rd Annual People's State of the State happens tomorrow at 11:45 at the Capitol, and it is the annual People's State of the State rally, which will take place right before the governor's State of the State address. Mark Dunlay, you're doing the work of the gods. I thank you very much for being with us, and best of luck.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you to WAMC.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, you can find out more information by going to hungeractionnys.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.